You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dutchie, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the water, and I'd like to give you information, asking for more, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges. I am the host of the Common Sense Show, and we're going to move a lot of the stuff that we do here at the beginning of the show, typically, except I do want to say one thing before I forget. The ad that you just heard for Virtual Shield, they're offering a 30-day free trial, and I just wanted to throw that in because that's not in the ad. I mean, and then 20% off for life using the coupon code Hodges20. I wanted to make sure everyone heard that. But where I want to go here in the first couple of minutes is it was about 45 minutes to an hour ago. I received a call from Josh Coy's dad, and I know a lot of you have written to me, and you have said how much you enjoyed me playing his shows on my website at thecommonsenseshow.com, and what an interesting contrast we were. Well, Josh passed away today. Had a pretty lengthy conversation with his father, and he was close with his dad and talked about him often. And Josh and I had actually talked about doing some more crossover work and cross-pollinating some of our efforts, and I knew he was really in bad shape, but I just, you know, you're never ready when the end comes. And I didn't think the end was this close, excuse me, and there was nothing to indicate it. And that's also what his father had shared with me as well, too. We had just talked not too long ago about crossing over some of our efforts. But I know this is going to hit a lot of you very hard because he got a lot of interest from our listening audience. You just love to hear him and a show, and I'm really, really sorry that he won't be able to continue. You know, I first met Josh, he was in his late 20s, and I kept thinking, man, this is really so unique for someone so young to have so much wisdom and awareness of the world. And I kind of took him under my wing, but he really didn't need that. He branched out, and he went on WYDE, the state's largest FM in Alabama, really the largest in a four-state region. And he ruled the airwaves on Saturday night. He was funny, but very knowledgeable. And he had a unique gift of blending the serious in with the humorous. And unfortunately for him, Crawford Broadcasting basically serves the deep state. And they showed him the door because he wouldn't stop telling the truth about Hillary Clinton and some of the other deep state globalists. And that's when he started his own podcast. And we need young voices like Josh, and this is why I paid so much attention to him, and then we got to be friends, and so on a personal level, I will miss him more than I can express. And he was always reliable, always a friend when you needed one. And that's why I say turn your attention, too, to Joe Hagman, a younger guy who we need in this movement. We've got too many old farts like me, and we need to start handing some of this off to the younger generation, because this is a multi-generational fight, or at least until Jesus comes back in the second coming. So I just wanted to announce, and I didn't have a prepared statement because I really didn't have time to put it together, and it was a rather difficult thing to come on late notice here and share this with you, but I did not want to hold it back. And I have called a few friends, and they're all as saddened and as grief-stricken as I am. I just spoke to Randy Yarbrough a few moments ago, a talk show host in Northern Colorado, and I've hosted his show and been on it quite a bit, and Randy was deeply distressed. We all admired Josh. I mean, we loved him. He was so honest, and And there was an innocence about him, too, that was just so appealing. My deepest sympathies go out to his family. They raised a fine son, and he served us very well. Well, we have a good show for you tonight, a really, really good show. And I'll try to put my business face on now. And in the first 2 hours, we have Robert David Steele, and we have a ton of very, very serious stuff to talk about. That's what I'll call it, stuff. And in the final hour, on the same level of intensity, my friend Mike Adams comes on, and we're going to talk about the termination of his YouTube channel. But Mike Adams is a fighter. He doesn't lay down for anybody, and I admire that about him. And he's fighting back, and we're going to talk about some things he has planned and how he's striking back at the globalists who have tried to put a big dent in his operation. So that's our show for tonight. I want to go straight to Robert David Steele, who's kind enough to join us really on kind of short notice. I talked to him earlier this week by email, and we exchanged, and I said, in 2 hours? And he goes, yep. So very generous with his time. He's a former CIA clandestine operative, do-it-all for the CIA. His reputation's impeccable. He's one of the most intelligent people that we ever interview here on this show. He's incredible with his knowledge of world events, his insights, and he's going to share those with us. Robert, I want to welcome you to the show, and I'm going to clear up my gloomy mood here, and we're going to jump right into business and get down to what we need to talk about.
Well, Dave, let me say that I thought the eulogy that you read for your friend was very, very compassionate and intelligent and just very thoughtful.
Thank you. Josh deserves the best I could give. Anyway, Robert, we were talking right before we came on air about a number of things, and so I'm just going to throw it to you. I know you think that what's going on in Korea really kind of, pun intended, trumps everything else right now, and I agree with you. Let's start there. What's your take of South Korea, North Korea, and Trump all having an intention to talk?
Well, let me say it's more than an intention. I think the deal was cut between Trump and Xi months ago. I was in Japan the week of 18 February, and Benjamin Fulford, who's one of my favorite sources for everything having to do with Asia, banking, and gold, as well as the crossover between crime and politics, Benjamin really bent over backwards and introduced me to 12 of his best contacts, including the head of an Asian secret society and Princess Nakamaru, who is the royal family liaison to North Korea. And I traveled across Japan for the privilege of having lunch with her. She hosted me very, very graciously. And she told me outright the deal was cut months ago. The Koreas are going to unite. China has agreed to be responsible for the loose nukes in North Korea, and the United States has agreed to withdraw its military forces from Korea. Hopefully that includes whatever nuclear weapons we've got salted there. And so I believe that at the executive level, which is to say far above James Mattis or Rex Tillerson, Donald Trump and Xi Jinping have cut a deal to unite the Koreas, demilitarize the Koreas, denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, and if they do that, as despicable as the Nobel Peace Prize has been in some of its assignments, for instance, to Barack Obama, a travesty, they both have earned the Nobel Peace Prize. I think the Koreas will unite just like the Germanys united, and Donald Trump is the guy who made the executive decision to make the deal with Xi. So God bless Donald Trump. And that's just one of the two big things. The other one is that he's told Tillerson and Mattis that we are not staying in Syria. We're getting out of Syria. So Trump is actually living up to his campaign promises about overseas affairs.
I would agree with him with Syria, but only if it's a bilateral agreement. The Russians have to go, too.
Well, Dave, let's agree to disagree on that, because one of the problems that we have is that Saudi Arabia although it's come a long ways. I mean, the NSA data that we fed to the Saudis, which I hope will feed to other countries. I've got people from Australia, Canada, France, and other countries calling me saying, when can we get data on our own pedophiles, on our own corrupt traders and elite bankers and so forth? And I'm not sure that's going to happen anytime soon. But what we saw in Saudi Arabia was the termination of the Wahhabist rule in that kingdom. However, Saudi Arabia is still causing a lot of trouble in Yemen and a lot of trouble in Syria. You also have the issue of the Kurds. So my bottom line is I think we have to respect Turkey, Iran, Egypt, Jordan, and we have to hope that Saudi Arabia will be contained. And, of course, we also have to put the Zionists back in a very small box. But my bottom line is Donald Trump promised no more elective wars, no more foreign, no more occupation of foreign countries. I want him to live up to that promise, and I think he's on his way there.
Well, we're actually in more agreement than one might think from listening to us. When I say Russia must leave, I'm also talking about Saudi Arabia. I'm talking about Israel not exerting influence as well as Turkey. Is that possible?
The short answer is yes. We're at the beginning. I think it actually started in 2012. But we're at the very beginning of an economic and financial do-over in the world. I'm hearing that a lot of the arrests for the sealed indictments started today, Sunday. And that on the 26th of March, there will be two gold-backed currencies announced, one the Chinese yuan, the other one a new U.S. dollar. The Federal Reserve note will be retired. The Federal Reserve will be nationalized at some point. And according to several people, but I am not a rocket scientist in this area, so I'm not really sure of what to believe, but according to several people, the documentation has been done to take back the $21 trillion that was stolen from the Republic and the taxpayer by the banks. And if that happens, the United States becomes a creditor nation rather than a debtor nation. We could even have a debt jubilee. Now, what I'm saying here is that everything on the planet could change overnight. We just don't know.
Would that, do you think that would entail, and I know this is an educated guess on your part, so speak to the people who might have $1,000 of cash in their safe at home. Would they have to physically take that to the bank and exchange it for the new currency?
That's a good question, and I don't know what the answer is. What I'm reading right now, I mean, Wayne Jett wrote a book called The Fruits of Graft. And I pay attention to him and Martin Armstrong and Catherine Austin Fitz and Paul Craig Roberts and a few others, but those are the main ones, and Benjamin Fulford. And I also have two deep sources that talk directly to the elders who control the gold who are behind the banks. They've basically withdrawn their collateral support from all of the banks, which is why Donald Trump has been successful in taking down the deep state. I mean, essentially, the Rothschilds, the Chabad supremacists in the Vatican have all sued for peace and truth and reconciliation. They're on the run, which is to say they're basically knuckling under. I do believe there will be financial turmoil, perhaps 90 days worth of financial turmoil, but this is secondhand judgment. I myself have no knowledge. I do think that we are going to see arrests within the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Central Intelligence Agency. And I know with interest that Julian Assange has just said that the CIA is rushing to try and run CIA people for Congress. I am really looking forward to helping veterans who are conservatives run against every one of those CIA people, because I am going to help these conservatives destroy these CIA people, because these CIA people have been assassinating tens of thousands of people with drones. They've been renditioning and torturing people, creating terrorists everywhere, and they haven't been able to provide, according to General Tony Zinni, Marine Corps, more than 4% of what the world needs to, what the president needs to know. The CIA is an abject pathological failure. And anybody who runs for office from the CIA should be laughed out of town.
I am so glad to hear you confirm this, because, you know, the left, is in full retreat and full denial about this.
Well, there's a great cartoon of peak left. I mean, when the left embraces the CIA, you know the CIA has become a lying sack of shit.
Well, it's a family show, Robert. But
a lying sack of sheets.
That's what I thought you said the first time.
Yes, cheese and rice. Cheese and rice. You know, I mean, really, seriously, I'm not even sure what the right word is, but how preposterous is it for the hashtag resist Sotos backed seditionist morons to embrace the CIA as their candidates for Democratic election? I mean, that is just, to me, not only the height of hypocrisy, but it really demonstrates that the CIA is simply not a serious organization.
Let me ask you a question that's kind of a sidebar to what you just brought up. I was having a conversation with my congressman about a month and a half ago, and he said to me in the course of that conversation, as they were talking about limiting chain migration to the DACA issue, he said the Democrats feel that they need to get 10 million illegals into this country to swing the 2020 general election. Do you think that's accurate?
I think the Democrats believe something along those lines. I mean, we're right back. This has happened once before in the Jackson era, and immigrants were used to essentially swing American politics. I think President Trump is absolutely on the right track in shutting down chain migration. We need to get back to merit visas. We need to get back to doing what's right for America, not what is right for the two-party tyranny. Let me also emphasize that the president's enemies are not only the Democrats, but also the Republican elite, such as Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. These people are not the president's friends. And I really emphasize to people that the two-party tyranny that we have right now is one bird, two wings, same waste. That's my family show word. One bird, two wings, same waste. So one of the things I've been, for the last several weeks, I've been fielding calls from some very, very wealthy people. And I have to say thank you to you and the Hagman and Hagman show, although they're not speaking to me lately. I'm not sure why. But you, Hagman and Hagman, Victoris Libertas, and a few others put me on the map to the point that I've just been told I might be getting $125 million in 2 weeks to create the Truth Channel, the post-Google Internet. And I'm scheduling myself to go to Estonia, which has already done a lot of what I want to do. And, Dave, if we're successful, not only are we going to put veterans in line for every single congressional office, but we are also going to create a new substitute for what I call hashtag Google Gestapo. We'll start with free email, and it'll be something along the names, along the lines of your name, your congressional district, state, your name at congressional district number state americafirst.net. So free email for everybody. We want to get everybody off of Google and all these other emails. Free email for everybody, and it's encrypted email. It's email that cannot be read by NSA. No backdoor. Servers in Iceland. And so we want to create a substitute for Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Although Gab pretends to be a substitute for Twitter and it's trying to expand into videos, I'm not impressed so far. So I'll give Gab a hearing. But by and large, I think we're going to create something completely new from scratch that is encrypted end-to-end, that cannot be censored or manipulated, in which every individual has the rights of anonymity, privacy, identity, and security. And every individual has full voice and vote, and they have access to the truth about everything. And it cannot tolerate lies.
That sounds exciting. Is there going to be... Now, I'm connecting remote dots here, and it's probably invalid.
Good. I'm loving this conversation.
SpaceX has launched some of these satellite cubes that are outside mm-hmm. the purview of the FCC, being, I think, above 62 miles above the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to tap into some of that, or is that just two separate deals?
Let me say that I trust nothing that Musk is doing. I think he's a money launderer for the Pentagon.
You're the second person of note that's told me that in the last 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. So bottom line here is, no, I'm not going to rely on any of these people. However, once you have encrypted email and once you have your overall architecture in place, then there are a number of different things you can do. And among them, Bill Binney and I are running buddies now. Binney was the chief technical officer for a major portion of NSA, if not the whole thing, and he and I have been talking about what next. There are a number of abandoned satellites, generally in northern orbits, that have 10 to 15% residual capability still operational. We can move those satellites into southern orbits, and we can literally provide free satellite internet to the third world. I see us moving toward free internet and free education over the internet and free cellular communications as a human right. And one of the companies that's very interesting to me is AT&T. Now, I happen to be a huge fan of AT&T because I'm of a generation that served at the same time that Harold Janine was the head of AT&T. And I still remember the story where a guy made a $10 million mistake and someone asked Janine if he was going to fire him. And Janine said, no, I just paid $10 million for this guy's education. I'm keeping him. I mean, he was that kind of leader. AT&T actually was the primary sponsor for the non-military creation of the internet and a lot of the technologies behind social media. And what we have in the U.S. government, the Patent Office, is essentially a criminal organization. And people like Hillary Clinton and James Comey have apparently gotten their early wealth by helping to steal patents from people who register stuff with the Patent Office, and the patent is either moved into the national security arena and it's a suppressed technology, or it's stolen outright. And so AT&T actually has a legitimate claim on a lot of the technologies that Facebook and Twitter and Google have been using. And of course, Google was founded with CIA funding and was envisioned to be a replacement for NSA at the internet level. So I think that we're about to have a revolution. I'm about to go out to a conference that I recommend to anybody who's interested in the future of the internet. It's called the Internet Identity Conference. It's taking place in Mountain View the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of April. I will be present, and so will the top three or four people from the crypto world that I might possibly be funding. So I think we're at the beginning of reinventing the internet as something that is designed for people. And let me just, while I'm thinking about it, make the point. The internet was designed for military use, and it was designed for machine-to-machine communication. The new internet is going to be defined and designed for human-to-human communications, and it's going to be designed to be the world brain, to have all content online. Right now, today, we're working with 1% to 2%. I mean, Google is largely worthless. It's done some good things, but it's largely worthless because a lot of the content is not indexed, including PDFs that don't have persistent URLs. So we're going to create a world brain internet in which not only can all humans connect to all other humans, they can connect to all information, and we can link data and weight data at the paragraph level. This is what my friend Doug Engelbart called open hypertext document system. Instead of just linking documents and URLs, you actually link at the paragraph level. So in a particular book, for example, it might have three really great chapters or 17 really great paragraphs, and the rest of it is garbage. This is a way for us to lift the cream to the top at the paragraph level. It's just so much that's going to be happening in the next 4 to 6 years.
When do you expect to be operational? Do you have a target date?
Well, if I get the first 125,000 on Friday of this coming week, that's the money that will pay for the lawyers and the accountants and establishing several organizations, three of which will be compliant with the Federal Elections Commission. We are going to move a ton of money into getting veterans who are conservatives elected. Now, part of this is not only taking over the GOP. The first guy to get the first $5 million is Dan Schultz. Dan Schultz's ideas on filling the vacant seats at the precinct level of the GOP, half of the seats in the precinct level of the GOP are vacant. We're going to fill those seats with conservative veterans. And so the GOP is part of it. I just came back from a meeting with libertarians in Richmond. They had their annual state meeting. And I got to say, I'm really impressed by the leadership of the Libertarian Party at the state level. I think the libertarian leadership at the national level is absolutely worthless and should be fired. They're not serious about winning elections. But at the state level, the libertarian leaders get it when I say to them, using the Virginia example, we've got 11 congressional districts in Virginia. Let's allocate those districts between the Libertarians, let's say three districts for the Libertarians, three districts for the Greens, one each for the Reform Party and the Constitution Party, and the rest for Independents. And let's agree that we're going to run a unified campaign that says people, not parties, and we are going to elect one challenger in each of the 11 districts. So in the three districts where Libertarians are put forward, the Greens, the Independents, everybody agrees to vote for the Libertarian. And in the districts where Greens are put forward, the Libertarians vote for the Greens. The whole idea here is to create a swing vote in Congress that castrates the two-party tyranny and demands evidence-based decision-making.
How do you overcome the media dominance that supports this two wings of the same bird party?
That's where the other $100 million goes. We are going to create a truth channel, and in fact, we were going to call it the Trump channel, but we decided to call it the truth channel. All these people to get free emails, they will also be able to get from our substitute to Twitter, they'll be able to get daily trumpets from the president. We're calling them trumpets. So they'll get a trumpet. And they'll be able to answer back. Now, obviously, the president cannot process 200 million answers or 50 million answers or 10 million answers. So we are going to use the absolute best data visualization capabilities, which exist today. They're just simply not offered by Facebook and Twitter and all these other people. They don't want you to be making sense. They want you to be captive and reading advertising. So essentially, we have designed a presidential dashboard that allows the president to see what the country is hearing, is thinking on any issue for any location for any demographic. So if he wants to know what left-handed single soccer moms are thinking on gun control, he can pull them up. If he wants to know what left-handed Lithuanian dwarfs are thinking about immigration, he can pull that up. The other thing is that this money, which, by the way, it's $1 billion in total. The 125 is just the part that I control. There's at least six other slices that are all being done in different areas, some of which I'm not going to talk about. My slice is the technology slice. I'm responsible for creating the open source agency that creates the Trumps, the Truth Channel, and public intelligence that basically stops Congress from making decisions on a pay-to-play basis, which the president has properly pointed out is how Congress makes decisions today. They're simply bribed and blackmailed into making decisions on behalf of the 1% instead of the 99%. So God bless Donald Trump. I think he's broken the back of the 1%. Now our intent is to help him pivot and connect to the 99%. And my goal is to connect the president and expand the president's base from 27%, which is what got him elected, to 70%. And oh, by the way, I've been told that there is a group of conservative billionaires that has come forward and said they're going to pay for the wall. They're going to take that off the table. They are going to provide the money for the wall so that neither Mexico nor the U.S. taxpayer pays for the wall. So the president can fulfill that promise, and it kind of ends the acrimony over that issue.
If that happens, what do you think the president will do with the DACA people?
That's a good question. I don't know. I can't speak for the president. I think that there needs to be some compassion and some humanity. But yes, one of my friends, Greg Phillips, identified 3 million illegal voters who voted for Hillary Clinton. I mean, he had them identified by name. So let me tell you that one of the big things I've just published, or I'm about to publish tomorrow, something called Trump 2.0. And let me just read you what the game plan is. It's people, technology, and leadership. Under people, you mobilize veterans, you engage all others. Under technology, you have the open source agency that creates the Trump Studio, the post-Google Internet, and public intelligence on everything. All threats, all policies, all costs. CIA today does two out of 10 threats. It ignores poverty, infectious disease, environmental degradation, transnational crime, all that other stuff. It also does not do true cost economics, and it does not do compare and contrast. So it's largely worthless to all of the cabinet leaders who never get intelligence from CIA anyway. All right. So then under leadership, and this comes back to your DACA thing, under leadership, the president needs to sponsor the Election Reform Act, which will, among other things, create paper ballots counted publicly on site. Every single electronic voting machine in this country is compromised. The winner is predetermined before the first vote is cast when you are using an electronic voting machine. Now, we were able to stop Hillary Clinton from stealing the 13 states that she stole from Bernie Sanders, and that's one of the reasons the president was able to get elected in the face of what was a rigged system. But election reform is how you get honest voting and you prevent illegal citizens from voting and you open up ballot access. I mean, I listened to every single word of the president's speech in Pennsylvania, which is where I went to school. I went to Muhlenberg for my undergraduate and Lehigh for my first graduate degree. The president is starting to understand. He's already closed his election commission because he knew it was a piece of garbage. The person who wrote that wasn't a serious person, didn't understand anything about election reform. There are 12 different reforms that need to happen. If Donald Trump comes out and sponsors the Election Reform Act and says to everybody what I tried to put into his inauguration speech, the system is rigged and together we're going to unrig it, he will own Congress in 2018, 2020, 2022, and 2024. But he has to have an Election Reform Act.
Well, is Congress going to give that to him? That's the $64 million question.
No, this is real simple. The president is a genius at talking directly to the people. He introduces the Election Reform Act, and Paul Rand has already said that Paul Rand's political directors have already said that they will introduce the act if the president asks them to. But a president can go ahead and submit an act to Congress anytime he wants. The minute that the president has drafted and submitted the Election Reform Act to Congress, he does a nationwide address, and then he does a 50-state barnstorming tour, and every single member of Congress who refuses to sign who refuses to co-sponsor the Election Reform Act is out of a job. It's that simple. We've come to the line in the sand. The Election Reform Act is the line in the sand between Congress working for the 1% and Congress working for the 99%. This is how you make it clear to all of the constituents across America that their congressmen don't represent them. And the cool thing is we're not only planning to push this issue, hopefully, once the president sees the veterans have been mobilized. There's a military political action committee in planning. Once they see the veterans have been mobilized, and once they see that veterans are being put forth for every office in the land, the incumbents then have a choice. They can co-sponsor the Election Reform Act and perhaps live to fight another day, or they can be outed as Israel firsters. And they can be fired.
Timing of exposure will be everything.
Yes, it will, which is why I'm very concerned about the delays. This was supposed to start on the 1st of March. Right now, it's being delayed to coincide with the rollout of the gold-backed currencies on the 26th of March. So we're hoping to start appropriately enough on the 1st of April.
Is this the only release that's out there in the media on this switch over to the gold-backed currency change for the 26th of March?
Well, the American side of this has been kept very secret. The public releases have all been about the Russian and Chinese gold-backed currencies. For some years now, Russia and China have been developing a completely post-Western economic paradigm, including an alternative to the World Bank and the IMF, an alternative to the SWIFT system. Russia and China are prepared to leave the SWIFT system tomorrow. The SWIFT banking system is completely compromised by NSA. The entire Western banking system, including all the central banks, is completely compromised and not to be trusted. So on the one hand, I'm very sure that Russia, China, and basically everybody except for the U.S., Japan, Israel, and Saudi Arabia, those are the four that are left out. Everybody else is moving to a new economic system on the 26th of March. And supposedly, what I've been told, but I don't have direct knowledge, is that on the 26th of March, Trump is also rolling out his own matching initiative, which is going to gut the elite because it is going to make most of their wealth essentially worthless.
For that to happen, in my most humble opinion, I believe there has to be a lot of debt repudiation because that's where a lot of this wealth lies, ill-gotten gains from the credit swap derivatives.
Yeah. I agree with you completely, and I'm hearing more and more about a debt jubilee. And right now I'm only talking about a debt jubilee within the United States of America. There's $3 trillion worth of student debt, elderly health debt, family credit card debt, and small business debt. $3 trillion. I believe because they have stolen $21 trillion and that's now documented, I believe it's absolutely within the realm of possibility that that $3 trillion in individual and small business and family debt in the United States could be declared null and void. A debt jubilee, thank you, Donald Trump. The larger issue of debts to other nations, that's something I don't completely understand, but one person has told me that if and when we confiscate all of these $21 trillion, then at that point we become a creditor nation rather than a debtor nation. We can pay off China, and we have a clean sheet, fresh start. Bottom line here, I did my first graduate thesis at Lehigh in Pennsylvania, as it happens, on predicting and preventing revolution. The concentration of wealth and the loss of legitimacy of the government in the eyes of the public are the two major pillars for revolutionary, for violent revolutions. It looks like Donald Trump, with his executive order on being able to confiscate property from people trafficking and women and children, which includes the Clintons and most of the elites across the eastern and western coasts, and his new military manual for court-martials, which has been really put on steroids, because that manual for court-martials is now ready to handle a Nuremberg trial times 15. So it looks like behind the scenes everything has been done to essentially arrest and indict and convict and neutralize completely, let's say, 2% of the 1%. And the other 98% of the 1% had better have their hands holding their balls real tight because they know they're next if they stick their heads up. So I think the president has done it. And one of the things that helped, Bill Binney and I did a letter to Jeff Sessions, is we pointed out that the 99% of the NSA data that had not been processed by NSA, because NSA is not a serious signals intelligence agency. It's basically a criminal organization that spies on and blackmails congressmen to keep its budget alive, and their whole purpose in life is to spend lots and lots of money very badly. Well, their mass surveillance turns out to be a good thing in this instance because we've got every single dual citizen traitor, every single elite pedophile, and every single white-collar criminal. And that may be one of the reasons why the Goldman Sachs leadership is either resigning or flipping and coming over to Trump's side. We've got them all. So I'm feeling very comfortable right now, and I do think there's going to be a debt jubilee in the United States. There certainly should be. I don't know if there will be, but I hope there will be. And I do believe that the United States is going to very rapidly balance its books, because it's essentially going to take back everything that's been stolen from it by the bankers over the last 50 years. And by the way, let me say, I can't say enough things about Wayne Jett's book, Fruits of Graft. I provide a summary review. Americans need to understand that the Great Depression was deliberately created by the banks with the complicity of Franklin Delano Roosevelt in order to kill the rising middle class, buy up America at depression-level prices, and consolidate the control over the government. The Great Depression, in my mind, is the banking equivalent of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty and the Israeli planning of 9/11 as executed by Dick Cheney. These are crimes on a scale that most people cannot imagine. And Donald Trump, it seems to me, is moving in the right direction to basically balance the books for America.
That is quite a mouthful you just said here, and my head's still trying to catch up, and it's spinning. You know, I'm debating whether or not I should ask you this or not.
Ask me anything. I do this all the time.
It's a personal anecdote, but it's true and verifiable by three other people. You know, Larry Nichols had a relationship with the Clintons, and that's undeniable, and it was close at one time. And I had a few brief conversations with Larry some months ago, but nothing that really rose to the level of significance. Well, he got a call from Jeff Sessions while he was also on the phone with Paul Martin, good friend of mine, been on the show many times, and another friend of ours named Jack Isom, who's an accountant, who has some crossover interest with Paul and myself. And Larry got screamed at by Sessions for giving me sensitive, unwarranted information. And I have to tell you, first of all, that's not true. Everything I was saying about Sessions, I was coming up with other sources other than Larry Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
I think my sense is, and I hear what you're saying, it's the same thing Liz Crokin told me, that Jeff Sessions is in hibernation and going to spring out at the right time and be the hero. And I have to tell you, I don't see it, and I don't see it because of that anecdotal experience plus other things. There's too much low-hanging fruit that he's ignored.
Well, let me give you my own perspective, which is, number one, although I disagreed with the strategy that Jeff Sessions and the president executed from day one, which is they went after the pedophiles from day one. I wanted them to do the Election Reform Act first in order to get the public support so they could then do mass arrests and a whole bunch of other things. And, oh, by the way, I'm completely opposed to $500 million being spent on Guantanamo. We have at least 20 federal emergency management agency detention camps across this country that are being managed by the National Guard, and we have plenty of places where we could put people who are arrested. We should not be putting them in Guantanamo. We should not be spending money on Guantanamo. We should be giving Guantanamo back to the Cubans, and in fact closing all of our bases overseas, because those bases overseas are the lily pads for smuggling guns, gold, drugs, cash, and small children. So if Donald Trump wants to basically shut down all of the smuggling of children and gold and guns and cash and drugs, close our military bases overseas, starting in Germany, Japan, and Korea. And that will then allow him to create a very strong military here at home, rather than what we have now, which is essentially leased police forces. So my sense on Sessions is that his heart's in the right place. He's wrong on some things, marijuana, for example. It's clear that marijuana and hemp should both be legalized, and anyone who doesn't get that has not done their homework, or they're being paid to go against the grain. On balance, I think Sessions is doing what he's supposed to be doing. He did disappoint the president a couple of ways. I'd be very happy to see someone like Judge Andrew Napolitano become the attorney general, a great constitutionalist who would then be eligible for the Supreme Court at some point. But my bottom line, and this is, let's come back to the Koreas. My bottom line here is that all of the decisions are being made by President Trump, and the two people he actually talks to in depth are called Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping. Everybody else is in the servant class. And Tillerson and Mattis, for example, with all of their baloney about long-term military bases in Syria and so forth, these guys are still working for the military-industrial state. The only guy that's playing world-class poker is Donald Trump, and he's holding his cards close to his chest.
That is a really stunning observation about people next to him. What do you think about Tillerson?
I like Rex Tillerson. I have to tell you, disclosure, my father and my grandfather both worked for Exxon back when it was known as Esso. And Tillerson has a copy of my book. He got it when he was still the leader of Exxon. I like Tillerson. I think Tillerson is probably one of the most impressive adults that we have working for the president. But Tillerson doesn't have a grand strategy because the president hasn't developed a grand strategy. Right now, the president is essentially shooting from the hip and flying on instinct, and he's doing great. The things that he's deciding on instinct, to include the tariffs, to include putting drug dealers to death, are all brilliant. But he needs a grand strategy. And a grand strategy, which I was paid to write three monographs for the Army War College, a grand strategy would, among many other things, close all of our military bases overseas, bring all of our troops and their wallets and their families home. It would cut the Department of Defense by 50% because that consumes 60% of our disposable federal budget. It would transfer, I would say, $2 to $3 billion, if not much more, to state and humanitarian affairs. We would have an undersecretary for peace. We would offer the 40 dictators on the planet a 5-year exit strategy. And then we would spend the rest of the money at home. I mean, we desperately, take Texas as an example. There are 30 towns in Texas that are running out of water. Their aquifers are drying up. We should have a nationwide Manhattan Project to apply free energy to creating unlimited desalinated water to fill the aquifers up before they get invaded by salt water, at which point they're gone for centuries. So there's a lot of long-term thinking that is not happening in the United States of America, in part because we don't have a grand strategy. I think we need to abolish the National Security Council. That's how the deep state owns the White House. We should abolish the National Security Council, replace it with a strategy advisory group that's run by a clerk, not a czar. And the president needs to start managing the country against all 10 high-level threats across all 12 core policies, from agriculture to water, in relation to true costs. America's economy is based on 50% waste and 90% profit for the banks. We can give every American a upper middle class life and a free education at 10% of the cost of what we're doing now, just by changing the financial dynamics.
But you're spitting in the face of the establishment that's making money off the system. That's going to be very hard to remove, isn't it?
Not if you put a Ranger battalion up their ass.
Define. Not the second part, but the Ranger battalion. How would you use them?
I'm telling you, do not underestimate the President of the United States of America.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this directly. Will he declare martial law and use the military in this purge? Is that what I'm hearing?
My best guess is that he will not declare martial law initially. And this is just me speculating here. This is what I would be telling him if he were asking me. Do not declare martial law. Do the arrests and have a very, very strong truth and reconciliation posture. And by the way, I don't know if people have noticed, but hashtag unrig helped defeat hashtag resist. all of these riots that George Soros was planning, all of these Black Lives Matters and all these false flag shootings of cops, they didn't happen. A whole bunch of white hats came out of the woodwork, and basically I think George Soros got the message. Do this crap and you're a dead man. So we've essentially neutralized the 1%. Where the president needs to focus now is on reconnecting to the 99% and restoring democracy, not only in our government, but in the workplace. All right? We have been killing unions. We have got most of America right now is working 2 to 3 part-time jobs with no benefits. And we have really allowed the industry, I mean, the Amazon warehouse workers are the poster children for the abused child locked in the closet. Amazon should be put out of business. And we do that with something called virtual Amazon, which is you have a token, you can go to any website on the planet, and you deliver that token, and with that token, they get paid, and they know where to ship it, and your information stays private. So I'm very, very, a virtual Amazon is one of my top 3 priorities in the post-Google internet.
It's amazing. Amazing stuff that we're talking about. And I don't want to open up another can of worms because we're coming up on the break here in about 2 minutes, except to say here, and I made a note, quick answer to this question. We can explore it more after the break. I see where Wyoming's legislature made gold and silver holdings tax exempt. Are you aware of that?
I wasn't aware of that. That's very interesting.
It ties right into what you're saying.
Yes. There's a lot going on, I think, that's very, very positive. I really think people have underestimated the president. And one of the things that has always frustrated me about him is the low-rent morons that he's had around him, including 9 Goldman Sachs bankers and 1 Goldman Sachs bimbo. And, of course, Herbert McMaster, who was a never-Trumper, who's a vastly overrated general that should have been retired long ago. And Jared Kushner. I mean, Jared Kushner is a very, very bad boy at multiple levels, and I think he needs to be sent out of the White House. So Trump now is finally, and maybe he was keeping his enemies close. He took Reince Priebus, who was clearly a traitor, because he wanted to settle the GOP. And so, I mean, I'm certainly absolutely willing to believe that Donald Trump knows a million times more than I do, and he's been handling himself in a very clever way while he negotiated all of these obstacles. We're now at a pivot point in his administration. Most of the riffraff are gone. Yeah, most of the riffraff are gone. Once he gets rid of Kushner and McMaster and hopefully abolishes the National Security Council, now he's ready for a clean sheet start. And when we come back, I hope you'll let me outline the Trump 2.0 game plan, which starts with throwing the press out of the White House. That real estate is too important to waste on scum.
Exactly. And on that note, we're going to run right to the break. We'll be back after the top of the hour, and we'll hit this 2.0 plan.